content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how you can do that later in the program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. You know, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. Now, the library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state, and if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program as well about that. Now, this month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the month of March 2016 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And the first book we're going to take a look at today, and the most popular one during the month of March 2016, is called NYPD Red 4. And it's by, of course, James Patterson and Marshall Karp. NYPD Red rocks, says the reviewer. With each installment, this somewhat unusual police procedural series by James Patterson and Marshall Karp seems to be increasingly grooming itself for a television series. The twist here is that the Red Unit handles cases involving the rich and famous of New York, whether residing or visiting, giving readers a glimpse into a world rarely seen by most of us. Toss in a bit of romantic frisson. Detectives Zach Jordan and Kylie McDonald, who head Red, are former lovers who are now committed to others, and you have almost constant tension, sometimes heavy, sometimes light, from page to page. Consider that Patterson has a penchant for featuring at least two mysteries per book in each of his offerings, whether solo or co-written. And there is simply no reason to say no. This is particularly true of the newly dropped NYPD Red 4, the best in the series to date. Now, Patterson and Karp waste no time bringing the wondrous ingredients of NYPD Red to a quick boil. It begins with the excitement of the world premiere of a new movie. Elena Travers, an A-list celebrity actress who is the featured star of the film, is making a high-profile red carpet appearance at its opening. Now, in order to multiply its wow factor, Travers is wearing millions of dollars worth of on-loan jewelry displayed in a necklace designed by Maxwell Bassett, known as the Jeweler to the Stars. Now, the event goes from celebratory to chaotic when an attempt to relieve the starlet of her jewels goes very wrong. By the time the dust settles and the smoke clears, Travers is dead in her limousine, and the jewel-encrusted necklace that had encircled her neck is gone. Zach and Kylie are called in due to the high profile of the victim. Now, Zach, it must be said, has some very interesting contacts in the underbelly of the Big Apple, and soon the investigation is headed in a few unexpected directions. However, Red soon finds itself assigned to a second case. A series of well-executed heists are being carried out at a number of hospitals throughout the New York area. Now, the thieves are stealing high-end medical equipment, cherry-picking a unit here and a machine there from the facilities. All that Red has to figure out is who would do such a thing and why. Well, the answers to both questions are surprising. Zach illustrates his aha moment when he uses a metaphor to at least partially answer the second question. As to the first, well, it's a surprise all the way around, as is the ultimate resolution. Meanwhile, things are in a bit of a turmoil on the home fronts of Zach and Kylie. Zach and his significant other have turned their relationship up a notch or two, but it's difficult to build momentum when Zach is, one, always working, and two, with Kylie. And the solution to at least part of the problem appears to be somewhat obvious. One of the lighter aspects of the book's suspense is seeing if the pair will figure it out. Kylie's situation is a bit more grim. Her husband, a recovering drug addict, has relapsed and is busily reestablishing contacts in the dregs of the drug community. Kylie, understandably, is bent on saving him from himself. It is obvious, though, that he doesn't want to be saved. Something has to give. And before the last page is turned, it does. NYPD Red has lots of twists and turns, violence, grim humor, and memorable characters. It is equal parts police procedural and caper novel, one that seems tailor-made for feature film status in the right directorial hands. There is a cinematic flow to the narrative that permits the story to unfold, frame by frame. Both loyal and casual readers of this fine series will not want to miss this installment. That review was written by Joe Hartlob in February of 2016. It's a new book, NYPD Red 4, by James Patterson and Marshall Karp. Now we'll turn to the second book we're going to talk about on this program. It's called The Guest Room by Chris Bojalian. From the New York Times best-selling author of Midwives and The Sandcastle Girls comes the spellbinding tale of a party gone horribly wrong. Two men lie dead in a suburban living room, two women are on the run from police, and a marriage is ripping apart at the seams. When Richard Chapman offers to host his younger brother's bachelor party, he expects a certain amount of debauchery. He sends his wife, Kristen, and young daughter off to his mother-in-law's for the weekend, and he opens his Westchester home to his brother's friends and their hired entertainment. What he does not expect is this: bacchanalian drunkenness, a dangerous intimate moment in his guest bedroom, and two naked women stabbing and killing their Russian bodyguards before driving off into the night. Well, in the aftermath, Richard's life rapidly spirals into a nightmare. The police throw him out of his own home. Now a crime scene. His investment banking firm puts him on indefinite leave. And his wife finds herself unable to forgive him for the moment he shared with a dark-haired girl in the guest room. But the dark-haired girl, Alexandra, faces a much graver danger. In one breathless, violent night, she is free, running to escape the police, who will arrest her and the gangsters, who will kill her in a heartbeat. It's a captivating, chilling story about shame and scandal. The Guest Room is a riveting novel from one of our greatest storytellers, Chris Bojalian. Now let's move to the next book for this program. This is a very popular author. Of course, you know Tom Clancy, and this is a book called Commander-in-Chief, which he co-wrote with Mark Greene. Now, the newest electrifying thriller in the number one New York Times best-selling series has President Jack Ryan and his allies facing a treacherous foe threatening to unleash chaos around the globe. Now, when Russian President Valery Volodin's ambitions are foiled in Dagestan, he faces a difficult choice. The oligarchs who support him expect a constant flow of graft. But with energy prices cratering, the Russian economy sputters to a virtual halt. Unable to grow the Russian market at home, his hold on power relies on expansion abroad, a plan that has been thwarted by the United States in the past. But this time, Volodin has determined that an indirect approach is the best. A floating natural gas facility in Lithuania is blown up. A Venezuelan prosecutor is assassinated. A devastating attack on a Russian troop train kills dozens. A chaotic world is the best camouflage for a series of seemingly unrelated attacks. Only one man recognizes an ominous pattern in the reports of terror from around the globe. U.S. President Jack Ryan sees a guiding hand in the worldwide chaos, but before he can act, he needs proof. While his intelligence agencies race to uncover the truth behind the attacks, the president struggles to unite a fractious and distrustful coalition of Western nations against the schemes of the Russian dictator. With 5,000 Russian troops poised to invade a NATO nation, can Jack Ryan move swiftly enough to stop Volodin's grand plan of global conflict and conquest? Or will he succeed in changing the balance of world power forever? Find out by listening to Commander in Chief, written by Tom Clancy, along with Mark Greeny. You're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately here on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thanks so much for joining me today. Glad to have you with me. Now we're going to turn to a new book called Scandalous Behavior, a Stone Barrington novel by Stuart Woods. In this Moments After sequel to Foreign Affairs 2015, Stone Barrington acquires an English country estate, a brand new enemy, and a corpse on his front lawn. The corpse, the least consequential of these three developments, is that of Sir Richard Curtis, Stone's new neighbor when he purchases Windward Hall from Sir Charles Bourne, a dying family friend of Stone's, sometimes lover, Dame Felicity Devonshire, head of M16. Now, Wilfred Burns, a hermit who's left the Royal Marines, where he served with Sir Charles and Sir Richard, to live quietly on the Windward grounds, promptly confesses to the crime and hangs himself in his cell. Stone is not satisfied with the confession, but it's hard for him or the reader to keep his mind on it when he's preoccupied with an orgy of consumer spending, not just the Windward estate, but a splendid pair of paintings, a new Bentley, and a wardrobe suitable for a country squire, and the attentions of his new lover, interior decorator Susan Blackburn. Not to mention Dr. Don Beverly Calhoun, who's taken offense at Hell's Bells, the smashing new fictional film directed by Stone's son, Peter, because he thinks it's a libelous portrait of the chosen few, the religious cult he leads. Now, Calhoun threatens lawsuits, but delivers stalkers with guns, all of them handily confiscated by Stone's colleagues in New York and Connecticut law enforcement. When Calhoun makes an offer on Curtis' house, the prospect of having him as a neighbor is more than Stone can abide, and the two declare open war on each other. Complications ensue, but they're never all that complicated. As Stone continues to bed top women, buy every piece of real estate in sight, and vanquish the competition with the wave of a hand, you can't help but be struck by his increasing resemblance to Donald Trump. Or is that suggestion grounds for a libel suit? And that book is called Scandalous Behavior, a Stone Barrington novel written by Stuart Woods, another very popular author that we frequently read about on this program. Now let's move on to the next book. It's by Catherine Coulter, and it's called Nemesis. Married FBI agents fight two vastly different criminals. Agent Lacey Sherlock is about to fly from New York back home to Washington, D.C., when she thwarts a terrorist bombing at JFK. The bomber seems a very unlikely terrorist, and it turns out he was forced into his role by a shadowy group holding his wife and children hostage. His attempt was just a diversion concocted by the group's mastermind, a wealthy Algerian professor living in London, whose real target is St. Patrick's Cathedral. Now, this attempt also fails, but that doesn't deter the professor from targeting St. Paul's in London. Back in Washington, Sherlock's husband and boss, Dylan Savage, is interviewing Walter Givens, a young man from a small Virginia town who's just killed his friend Sparky Carroll in the Rayburn House office building with a Wiccan ritual knife, but claims he doesn't remember a thing about it. Well, Savage goes to Virginia, where he uncovers dangerous undercurrents between a Wiccan family and their neighbors that lead to another murder and a double-barrel attack on him that's both physical and mental. Sherlock faces her own peril when the mastermind attempts with some success to wipe away anyone who might lead the FBI to his real identity and makes her the object of his special attention. The daring duo of Sherlock and Savage, and that's from Power Play 2014, by the way, once again takes on assorted criminals in this wide-ranging thriller. Though Savage's thin case is a runner-up to Sherlock's high-profile investigation, it is certainly the more interesting of the two. That book is called Nemesis, and it's by Catherine Coulter. Now we have a brief description of another book that was very popular at the Library for the Blind during the month. It's called Private Paris, and it was co-written by James Patterson, once again, and this time Mark T. Sullivan. Someone is targeting the most powerful people in Paris. Only Jack Morgan can make it stop. Well, when Jack Morgan stops by Private's Paris office, he envisions a quick hello during an otherwise relaxing trip. But Jack is quickly pressed into duty after getting a call from his client, Sherman Wilkerson, asking Jack to track down his young granddaughter, who is on the run from a brutal drug dealer. Before Jack can locate her, several members of France's cultural elite are found dead, murdered in stunning, symbolic fashion. The only link between the crimes is a mysterious graffiti tag, as religious and ethnic tensions simmer in the City of Lights. Only Jack and his private team can connect the dots before the smoldering powder keg explodes. Private Paris by James Patterson and Mark T. Sullivan. By the way, Private is the name of the investigations company. If you've read these books before, you probably know that. But Private is the name of the company, and it's all about what happens in their Paris office. It sounds like a good one. Now we'll turn to a book by Jeffrey Deaver. This one is called The Steel Kiss. New York Times best-selling author Jeffrey Deaver returns with his next blockbuster thriller featuring forensic detective Lincoln Rhyme. Amelia Sachs is hot on the trail of a killer. She's chasing him through a department store in Brooklyn when an escalator malfunctions. The stairs give way with one man horribly mangled by the gears. Sachs is forced to let her quarry escape as she jumps in to try to help save the victim. She and famed forensic detective Lincoln Rhyme soon learn, however, that the incident may not have been an accident at all, but the first in a series of intentional attacks. They find themselves up against one of their most formidable opponents ever, a brilliant killer who turns common products into murder weapons. As the body count threatens to grow, Sachs and Rhyme must race against the clock to unmask his identity and discover his mission before more people die. That book, another thriller, is called The Steel Kiss by Jeffrey Deaver. And all of the books that I'm describing for you today were the most popular ones during the month of March from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Based in Raleigh, North Carolina, but serving listeners all over the state with great books on tape, large print books, and Braille as well. More information about how you can become a patron at the end of this program, so stay tuned, and thanks for joining me today. Now we're going to turn to a book called Wildest Dreams by Robin Carr. With Thunder Point, number one, New York Times best-selling author Robin Carr has created a town where hard work and determination are all it takes to make dreams come true. That was Thunder Point was the name of the previous book. Blake Smiley searched the country for just the right place to call home. The professional triathlete has traveled the world, but Thunder Point has what he needs to put down the roots he's never had. In this quiet coastal town, he can focus on his training without distractions until he meets his new neighbors, and boy, does everything change. Lynn Sue Simmons and her teenage son, Charlie, are fixtures at Winnie Banks' house as Lynn Sue nurses Winnie through the realities of ALS. A single mother, Lynn Sue is proud of taking charge and never showing weakness. But she has her hands full coping with a job, debt, and Charlie's health issues. And Charlie is asking questions about his family history, questions she doesn't want to answer. When Charlie enlists Blake's help to escape his overprotective mother, Lynn Sue resents the interference in her life. But Blake is certain he can break through her barriers and be the man that she and Charlie need. When faced with a terrible situation, Blake comes to the rescue, and Lynn Sue realizes he just might be the man of her dreams. Together, they recognize that family is who you choose it to be. And that all takes place in the imaginary town of Thunder Point. It's called Wildest Dreams, and it's written by Robin Carr. Our next book is a good one. It's called Perfect Match by Fern Michaels. We read a lot about Fern Michaels on this program. An injured ex-athlete discovers that giving up on the game of life is not an option. As far as former NFL star Jake Masters is concerned, dreams are risky propositions. Years ago, he came achingly close to achieving his ambition of playing in the Super Bowl before a spinal injury ended his career. Confined to a wheelchair, unwilling to take a chance on another risky surgery that could restore his mobility, Jake now stays cocooned behind the imposing gates of his lavish home. But his twin sister Beth has no intention of letting him languish there forever. After years of flitting from one failed business idea to another, all fueled by Jake's generosity, she now owns a highly lucrative matchmaking service, and she's gifting the business to Jake, whether he likes it or not, while she follows her dreams of making it as a singer in Nashville. Well, though Jake had plenty of women falling all over him at the peak of his success, he knows nothing about matchmaking. He's willing to try for his sister's sake, and it's soon clear that he needs an assistant. Enter Gracie Sweet, whose slender frame belies a take-no-charge toughness that would put any linebacker to shame. Grace begins by revamping the business, and soon she's overhauling Jake's entire life. And, to his huge surprise, Jake's enjoying it. But when their clients become victims of theft, Gracie and Jake must reconcile their very different outlooks if they're to have any chance of saving the business, and if Jake is to make another play for the life he thought he lost. It's all about a perfect match, written by Fern Michaels. Now, the next book I'm going to summarize has actually been on our list before, and it was maybe in January or possibly December of 2015. I'm not exactly sure, but it's such a popular book. It went right up in the top 10 again during the month of March. So I'm going to read it again for you, at least a short summary of it. It's called The Guilty, and it's by David Baldacci, very, very popular author. Will Roby escaped his small Gulf Coast hometown of Cantrell, Mississippi, after high school, severing all personal ties, and, well, he never looked back, not once. Not until the unimaginable occurs. His father, Dan Roby, has been arrested and charged with murder. Well, father and son haven't spoken or seen each other since the day Roby left town. In that time, Dan Roby, a local attorney and pillar of the community, has been elected town judge. Despite this, most of Cantrell is aligned against Dan. His guilt is assumed. Well, to make matters worse, Dan has refused to do anything to defend himself. When Roby tries to help, His father responds only with anger and defiance. Could Dan really be guilty? With the equally formidable Jessica Reel at his side, Robbie ignores his father's wishes and begins his own desperate investigation into the case. But Robbie is now a stranger to his hometown, an outsider, a man who has forsaken his past and his family. His attempts to save his father are met with distrust and skepticism and violence. Unlike the missions Robbie undertook in the service of his country, where his target was clearly defined, digging into his father's case only reveals more questions. Robbie is drawn into the hidden underside of Cantrell, where he must face the unexpected and possibly deadly consequences of the long-ago choices made by father and son. And this time, there may be no escape for either of them. And that book was called The Guilty by the very popular author David Baldacci, and that's the second time in the last 6 months that that has been in the top 10 of the most popular books during the month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We have time for a couple of more short ones here before our program ends this time. Here's a book called Still the One by Jill Shalvis. That's S-H-A-L-V-I-S. Shalvis. Darcy Stone is game for anything except sexy Navy veteran and physical therapist A.J. Colton, the guy who had rejected her when she needed him the most. Now the shoe is on the other foot, and he needs her to play nice and help him secure grants for his patients. Unfortunately, Darcy can't refuse. She needs the money to fund her passion project, rescuing SNR dogs and placing them with emotionally wounded soldiers. AJ admits it. Darcy is irresistible, but he's already been battle-scarred by a strong-willed, vivacious, adventurous woman like Darcy, and he's not making the same mistake twice, until he and Darcy are forced to fake a relationship. Growing closer than they'd ever imagined possible, Darcy and AJ have to ask themselves how much between them is pretend. What is the real thing, and where does it go from here? That book is called Still the One by Jill Shalvis. Now here's one more, Crimson Shore by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. A secret chamber, a mysterious shipwreck, a murder in the desolate salt marshes, a seemingly straightforward private case turns out to be much more complicated and sinister than Special Agent AXL Pendergast ever could have anticipated. Pendergast, together with his ward, Constance Green, travels to the quaint seaside village of Exmouth, Massachusetts, to investigate the theft of a priceless wine collection. But inside the wine cellar, they find something considerably more disturbing, a bricked-up niche that once held a crumbling skeleton. Crimson Shore by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. And that's all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it today. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, simply Google or search North Carolina Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers and the website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. That's the group that sponsors this program. This program is intended for a print and visually handicapped audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.